Hello, I'm Jane Crowther, Editor-in-Chief of Total Film, and welcome to Inside Total Film, the weekly podcast from the Smarter Movie Magazine. And today, I'm joined by our reviews editor, Matthew Leyland.
Oh.
Hello. So this week, Matthew, we are rating period psychological thriller Eileen, jingle horror There's Something in the Barn, Eddie Murphy Christmas romp Candy Cane Lane, and revenge thriller Femme. But before we get onto that, what have you been up to this week?
I went to see in the new Godzilla film, Godzilla Minus One, which is kind of a prequel. It's kind of a pre-original Godzilla post-war Godzilla film, Japanese film. Obviously, we've had quite a lot of American versions of Godzilla recently, so this is a proper Japanese version. It's lots of fun. It's a like full-on disaster movie, but it does have kind of a lot of a subtext as well. There's quite a lot of substance there. It's very much a big old a metaphor for war and grief and coping with the fallout from tragedy. So if you like big scaly monster movies with
who doesn't?
A bit of bite.
I see what you've done. Delightful.
I would go for that one.
Yes. I'm currently nursing a sugar hangover because I went to the Wonka premiere last night.
Yeah.
My goodness. This was a return to the Bacchanalian days of when people did proper premieres before COVID, before, you know, recession, before the days of, people being careful. This was just Warner Brothers going, let's celebrate a huge movie. And wow, yes, there was chocolate fountains. There was sweets, as far as the eye could see, that you could just put in bags. There was candy floss clouds floating overhead. All the drinks were candy floss in them, and they were all brightly coloured. They were serving the actual chocolates from the film, the hover chocks and various other things. Hot and cold running candy. I mean, I don't think Timothée Chalamet was eating any of this, obviously.
No.
Got to get into those delightfully tailored suits, which he was wearing a beautiful plum velvet suit last night.
Oh, yeah.
Sans chemise. Sans chemise. He didn't wear a big top hat. I didn't wear one, but I did come home with a bag full of sweeties.
Really, the only word for it is...
We will be talking to Timothée Chalamet and Olivia Colman on next week's pod and reviewing it then. We can't review it until Monday, but we can do social sentiment, which I'm still kind of confused what that entails, because it seems to run a gamut online, doesn't it? Like people giving like huge chunks of story away and then other people just saying it's good or bad. I would say that this isn't as good as Paddington, which is Paul King's previous delights. But nonetheless, it's a four-quadrant crowd pleaser and as sweet as candy. There we go. That's my social sentiment. Right, shall we crack on? Because we've got a lot of things to discuss that aren't as sweet. Shall we go to prison now? It's this.
Listen up. This young lady is our new prison psychologist. She may be easy on the eyes, but I assure you, she is very smart.
I'm Rebecca.
I know.
I don't think I caught your name.
Oopsie.
Nasty habit. That's why I like it. I live a little differently than most people.
They're probably scared of you.
Prison is no place for a young lady. You got a big life ahead of you, I'm sure.
I'm just kind of average, I think.
You really think you're a normal person?
This is Eileen. This is from the director, William Aldroyd, who did Lady Macbeth, which was the breakout role for Florence Pugh. Yep. So he's very interested in stories about young women breaking out of their worlds using possible violence. Tell us about Eileen and who she is and where we find her.
So, this is set in 1960s New England around Christmas time. Eileen, she's played by Thomasin McKenzie, who's working at the local prison, lives with her dad, who's a retired cop, but now a full-time alcoholic and not very nice character. So she's kind of doing this sort of drudgery at the local prison. But then one day a new counsellor arrives in the shape of Anne Hathaway, and this kind of opens up her world in all sorts of ways. So she forms a bond with this very glamorous woman, Rebecca, and then they kind of set off on adventures that take, without giving anything away, quite a dark turn as the movie progresses, sort of in and around this prison, involving some of the other prisoners some of the locals. But yeah, it's quite a twisty movie. I suppose you don't want to go too far into it because there are quite a few surprises kind of coming up on this this slightly dangerous friendship relationship that these two women form.
Yes, there is a twist, well, a turn, shall we say, that this film takes and goes in a direction that some critics have not enjoyed. So without any spoilers, did you enjoy this? Was this something that you enjoyed one half and not the other? Did you enjoy the whole thing? How did it go for you?
First half, very much enjoyed. Really like the setup, the sort of the fun, dangerous element that Anne Hathaway introduces and the way she kind of unlocks possibilities for Eileen. But yeah, I thought as it got kind of darker and darker, I found it less appealing. I did think the ending was a bit kind of gratuitous and slightly nasty and unpleasant. But for the most part, I did enjoy it until it got to that point. I thought it was very, very well played. It looks incredibly wintry. I mean, they really kind of captured a sense of the sort of cold, the iciness, which kind of plays into the sort of emotional feelings of some of these characters. Like Eileen feels she's very isolated. She has this awful dad who kind of piles blame on her. So it kind of all sort of fits. It's all kind of a piece. But yeah, I think it did leave me with a bit of a bad taste in my mouth, which is a shame, really, because, yeah, I think it does have a lot of strong qualities otherwise.
But isn't that the point, Matthew? This is about a society, a certain time, a certain place in Massachusetts where women are expected to not voice what they actually want and how they actually feel. Eileen is a product of this, basically parenting her father. She brings him bottles of booze every night and has to put up with his abuse. She's sort of told off by the older women at work. She's sexually repressed. She really, you know, she is masturbating in cars. She's having fantasies about prisoners and guards. She really wants to express herself more widely, and she doesn't. She's tampered down. And in sweeps Rebecca. And I love the fact that she's called Rebecca as well, because it just evokes Du Maurier's Rebecca, this fabulous woman who is everything that Eileen isn't. And that dynamic is the same as in Rebecca, the second Mrs. De Winter and the first Mrs. De Winter, and the differences between them. And that, do you want to be that woman? Is that the woman you want to be? And I love the fact that in this, Rebecca, as Hathaway plays her, just wonderfully. I love the way she delivers lines. Some of her line readings in this is delicious, the way she says things. And also the great accents of the Massachusetts accents where everyone's got those flat A's. Love it. All goes with that wintry scene you're talking about. But that she thinks she is playing and manipulating a vulnerable and weak girl. And what she doesn't realize is that she's playing with fire. And I love that women manipulate women, society manipulates women, and nobody knows what the outcome could be. And it's dark. It is dark. It is nasty. It's when you peel back those layers of that nice society, that 60s society, it's not nice. It's not pleasant. Not nice things are going on. And I thought that this was tonally exactly right. It was like a film from that era. Even the titles are very period appropriate. The music works really well. Even the sort of at the very beginning when they're doing the title cards for the different production companies, you can hear a projector whirring. So it's basically an entire experience, like you're watching something from that era, but it's incredibly transgressive. And you wouldn't have got that film from that era. Yeah, I absolutely love this. Hathaway for the awards, I say. She's not got a chance, I don't think. There's other people that are going to be more popular and have bigger campaigns behind them. Yeah, but this,
smaller film, isn't it?
Yeah, but her performance here, the way she smokes a cigarette, everything about her is absolutely brilliant. I loved it.
She's a proper femme fatale, isn't she?
She really is. But somebody who doesn't actually know what she's doing, even though she thinks she does. And, you know, let's talk about Thomasin McKenzie. You know, she was seen in Last Night in Soho, a sort of similar vibe, actually.
It's a real companion piece, isn't it?
Yeah. And she's in Jojo Rabbit. She's this Kiwi actress who is doing just really interesting work. And she does play meek with a dark underbelly really, really well.
Yeah, there's always hidden depths, aren't there? You don't see at first, but they're kind of teased out as the film goes on. So yeah, same as in Last Night in Soho.
Yes. I actually think this is more successful than that, tonally, and where it goes. And sort of, I know that the intention with Last Night in Soho was that it would be quite lurid. But I think this works on a much better scale. And I wonder if that's because this was a book first, and the author of the book is one of the co-writers of the actual screenplay. So it feels extremely holistic. Everything works well. And, you know, I just love the detail that's in it. When you watch Eileen in the first 5 minutes, you know everything about this woman, from the way she drives a car to what she does when she gets home to, you know, the handful of snow down her pants that she has to put to calm her raging hormones. Yeah, she's a very complex box of delights, really. And she is going to explode at some point. You just know it. And it's a matter of when, not if. So I enjoyed watching to see when she would break out of that.
Yeah, you're on tenterhooks throughout, aren't you? Yeah, like you say, you can feel it coming. There's a real sort of foreboding air, even though it is quite playful to start with. There's quite a funny nativity scene in the prison. It's probably the comic highlight of the movie. But yeah, it does get progressively darker and colder and steelier as it goes on. Just found the climax, I just thought there's a kind of, without giving too much away, there's a lot of distress going on. I felt it lingered just a bit too much on that, really. I felt they could have cut that short a bit, really. It didn't need to go into the amount of detail they do, so quite off-putting for me.
Yes, so trigger warning for people, you know, this does deal with abuse and incest, so it's not a sort of femme fatale romp and thriller. It is dark, and it does go to places that are very uncomfortable in great detail. But I kind of think that shocking detail is useful, because again, we're not sweeping this under the carpet. When we're talking about abuse, we're talking about the actual sort of nuts and bolts of it, and what that looks like, and what the everyday sort of living with that is like. And why should we shy away from that? And why should we package that up and make it pleasing to people? Perhaps audiences and the people in this film need to know what goes on behind closed doors. So I didn't find it a step too far. I thought it was stressful and upsetting, but in the right way. Agree to disagree, Matthew, on this one. Would you recommend people go and see this in the cinema? I mean, I think it's fantastic, the sort of detail of the period sort of aspect of it with the projector noises and everything. I think to see it in a big screen would benefit. What do you reckon?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, it's very cinematic. Yeah, it looks fantastic. It will play really well on a big screen. But like you say, I think with caveats, with a trigger warning, that it does go very, very dark, even though it might seem like it's going to be more of a caper to start with. It does go to these dark places. So brace yourself for that. Be prepared.
Indeed. Strap yourself in. It's going to be a bumpy ride. Eileen is in cinemas on Friday. Right. From one snowy place to another. Let's get our woolies on for this.
There's something in the barn.
It's probably just the wood. Old buildings, they creak and groan.
That's a barn elf.
Are they real?
Yes. The barn elf hates changes to the barn.
What do you think?
No!
Maybe it's a child who ran away from home headed to a Nordic death metal festival.
It has a beard, Bill.
So this is There's Something in the Barn, which I love the fact that when somebody says the title of the film within 5 minutes of the film starting, I'm like, you know where you are with that kind of film.
Absolutely.
What is in the barn, Matthew?
Well, do you want me to say, should we go into that detail?
I think
the trailer, I assume it's in the
Yes,
trailer.
It is. And, you know, like, we get to what is in the barn pretty darn fast. So go ahead and tell everyone.
Well, it's set in Norway, remote corner of Norway. And in the barn is an elf. And this American family who are kind of looking to set up a new hotel business out in this remote corner. The young son of the family finds this elf and befriends it. But there's certain rules, a la gremlins, that you have to follow with this elf. And there's a lot of kind of local lore surrounding these elves and what they're capable of. And inevitably, these rules get broken and then all hell breaks loose to do with these elves and the locals and this American family. So yeah, it's effectively a horror comedy.
Which would you say it sort of leans on more, the horror or the comedy?
The comedy. I mean, I wouldn't say I found it scary at all. It's much more in the sort of fun vein of something like Gremlins or the Leprechaun movies. That feels like it's a bit of a touchstone for these as well. So yeah, it's quite grisly in places. Some splatter, some vomit. Yeah. That's your bag. But yeah, it's much more kind of played for dark laughs in a sort of slapstick and splatter going on. So it's kind of aiming for people who kind of like a Christmas movie with a bit more of an edge.
Yes, with sort of farming weapons involved. And to that end, it's a little bit like the David Harbour film we had last year, sort of laughs with extreme violence. It's also a comment on Americans trooping around the world, oblivious of customs and wanting to sort of colonize an area as a little place of their own away from home. There's sort of jokes about that, which I enjoyed. I also sort of liked, there's a snarky police officer who turns up and is always taking the piss out of them. And then there's the interfamily play. You know, there's a dad who with two children who's lost his wife and has remarried, and there's the sort of evil stepmother, or is she, and they're trying to sort of align, and the fact that this trial by fire that this family goes through, fire being an operative word that does happen a lot in this film, is something that would sort of unite them and gel them together as a real family. So it's sort of trying to do a lot of stuff, but I think on the surface it's just essentially, do you enjoy little drunk, aggressive elves really messing up somebody's pristine house, which I did. It was just a silly, sort of completely forgettable 90-minute thing that involves sledging and moose, not the chocolate kind, but the one with horns. And just the idea that we go to places that have, you know, traditions and stories, and we need to be aware of them and be socially conscious of where we go in the world. I liked that. I thought it was good.
Quite broad, isn't it? But that kind of works for this sort of film. I think the sort of the budgetary constraints show in a few places. Like you said, there's a big sledge chase scene, and that's let down quite a bit by some of the green screen work isn't too effective. So I felt like that kind of pulled me out a bit. And some of the way the elves are, the sort of the makeup and prosthetics on the elves aren't perhaps the best, but it doesn't kind of matter too much in this sort of film, because it is a kind of sort of cheap and cheerful kind of go for broke subversion of traditional family movies. And it's very funny as well. The daughter in the family, I thought she was terrific. She's great with swearing. She's like really delivers the F-bombs with aplomb. And there's a lot of friction between her and the stepmom in the family, and that plays out quite nicely. And you've got the kind of oblivious dad as well, who's really trying to pull everything together, but not really in tune with what's actually happening, but kind of doing his best. And there's some sentiment as well between the boy and the elf, because they form a bond. So that kind of plays into all the tensions that are going on elsewhere. So you're waiting for that to resolve itself. And it has a slight E.T. vibe as well. So, yeah, I think if you're looking for a horror comedy, there's not that many around at the moment. You want an alternative to the more syrupy sort of romantic Christmas movies that are out there, I think this does the job.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's sort of in the wheelhouse of Gremlins. There's some Home Alone in there, you know, sort of booby trapping the house and creating bombs out of baubles, etc. Mm-hmm. So if you like that sort of thing, you'll have some fun. It's not going to live long in your memory. You're not going to want to watch it again. But if you fancy a bit of a silly, tinsely sort of movie that will pass the time, I think this one would do. Yeah. Do you think you should go and see this in the cinema with your glass of eggnog?
Ooh, not necessarily, because I think perhaps the budget limitations will show up quite a bit on a big screen. I don't think it, I mean, I watched it on digital on a laptop, and I don't feel it really lost anything. I didn't feel like, well, I really should have watched this, you know, on a big screen. So no, I think you're quite fine to watch this at home, really, with your favourite libation inside you.
Okay, well, it is in cinemas from Friday, but, you know, if you really love Christmas movies and you're a completist, get thee to the cinema, but it's also on digital. So you can take your pick. See it down the cinema with your eggnog. Smuggle that in. No, not suggesting that. Don't do that. But you can have your eggnog at home and sit in your pyjamas, in your Christmas onesie, all good. And make sure you lock the doors, because obviously you don't want any very angry elves coming in. Right, it's time to get more Christmassy with the next film. It's this.
Check that list twice.
What was your Christmas wish?
I just want it to be the best Christmas ever.
Oh, ignore all the fine print. Honestly, it's like you're signing your life away.
This is crazy.
Hold up, that was your wish? Not like, I don't know, world peace?
End hunger.
End homelessness?
Stop climate change.
Save the polar bears?
New Drake album.
Oh, I love Drake.
Point taken.
So this is Candy Cane Lane, and this is, you know, unapologetically ribboned and tinseled. This is Eddie Murphy having a go at a Christmas movie. What's he up to, Matthew?
Well, stop me if you've heard this one before, but this is a story of a family. A family with several children getting ready for Christmas, and there's an evil elf in the mix they have to contend with. And in both families, the mum is called Carol as well. So this is...
Oh, basically... do you see what they've done?
You see what they've done here? This is something in the barn, but yes, much more family comedy. The ostensibly the premise is that Eddie Murphy's character, Chris, he's determined to win the annual street decorating competition because he's just lost his job, and it looks like there's a $100,000 prize in the offing. So he's going all out to win this competition, and he strays upon this Christmas decoration shop in the middle of nowhere, which is seemingly too good to be true. And it's run by Gillian Bell's elf, Pepper, who seems quite benevolent at first, but she has ulterior motives. And essentially it turns into a different type of quest to basically thwart this elf and save Christmas if Eddie and his family can do this. And there's lots of kind of bringing to life traditional Christmas icons, very much centered on the 12 Days of Christmas song. So quite a lot of CG involved.
A lot of aviary action. There's birds everywhere in this, which I'm not sure added a Christmas spirit. But like Wonka, this is about teaching children to always read the small print, which is a very good life lesson, I would say.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
But apart from that, is it any good?
I think if you take it in the right spirit, I mean, yeah, I think you need to exercise a bit of goodwill towards it. I mean, I'm a huge, huge Eddie Murphy fan. He's still my favourite funny person who's ever been in movies ever, and this obviously does not fit into his the classics of yesteryear, like his Christmas movie Trading Places or Beverly Hills Cop, but I thought this was one of his better efforts of recent times. It's 2 hours, which feels really too long for a film like this, but it does have a kind of a sort of solid structure. There's a kind of this quest element where they've got to collect these things by a certain deadline, so that kind of gives it some momentum, and it is quite sweet and funny in places. I thought they did a good job of fleshing out the family, and they're all kind of they all had their own kind of arcs,
and they're all got Christmas names. The kids are called Nick, etc. You know, and Chris is obviously like a Kris Kringle. So we're really leaning heavily into that Christmas spirit, aren't we?
Yeah, and you've got Tracy Ellis Ross from the TV series Blackish, which is it's kind of similar in a way. It does have that kind of sitcom family vibe to it. And I thought she worked really well. She kind of holds her own against Murphy. She has some very funny moments as well. And Gillian Bell is she's fun, wreaking mischief all around the movie. There's an animated element as well. These kind of figurines that come to life. And Nick Offerman does a very interesting English accent throughout the movie, which I don't know how you felt about that with your interest in accents.
Nick Offerman's English accent. Is that what he was attempting? Because kind of, it really wasn't so very good. Yeah. Yes. There's just these sort of like little figurines, aren't they, that are trying to bust out of their prison. Yeah, that not very good. I mean, it was all fine, wasn't it? This is the thing. My bar for Christmas movies isn't very high. There's not that many that are, you know, really, truly cracking. You know, I'm not a fan of The Holiday or any of those things. So, or certainly not Love Actually. Good Lord, no. So my bar is so low that I sort of quite enjoyed this. But I don't think I enjoyed this as much as There's Something in the Barn. And as we've sort of been quite lukewarm on Something in the Barn, I feel like this is... even more tepid. I really like Eddie Murphy. You know, donkeys are a huge thing in our house. We love Donkey. Yeah. And obviously, I loved Beverly Hills Cop, and I love his stand-up, you know, his thing when he does his whole thing about how kids behave when they hear the ice cream van is something that is seared in my memory. I think he's great. And here he's just coasting, you know, he's able to do this in his sleep. Yeah. He's sort of his reaction shots and his double takes and the way he delivers lines is funny, but only because he's Eddie Murphy, not because this is a great script or a great story or indeed great direction. But if you want something inoffensive and, you know, got plenty of jingle and jangle, then it will probably serve a purpose.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think it played well with families. There is quite a little, there's sort of jokes about nearly saying profanity. So you might want to be aware of that if you're watching it with very young children, about having to explain which words they almost said. That's kind of a recurring thing. But otherwise, yeah, it's very sort of playful and light, and lots of effects flying around. But yeah, I do think they could have clipped it back a bit in the edit, because I think 2 hours is a bit of a stretch for this kind of movie. But if you're an Eddie Murphy completist like me, and it's the same director as Boomerang, Eddie Murphy's and Halle Berry's romantic comedy from 30 years ago. One of his better films, I think, from his sort of mid-period.
Yeah.
It's not on that level, but...
Certainly not. No, I mean, this is Eddie, I think, having to pay some bills, frankly. But, you know, if you're a fan, help him do that. By watching it, because it's on Amazon Prime from Friday. So you can watch this at home and contribute to their numbers and, you know, Eddie will be fine. I personally would like to see what he's going to do next. And he's got some more exciting projects in the pipeline than this. So this is just Murphy coasting for me. And that's totally cool if that's what you fancy. If you eggnog again, Christmas onesie, it's okay. Neither of these Christmas films will live long in the memory. Shall we move on and see if our next film will? It's very different.
Hasn't really felt like the real Jules since the attack.
Yeah, I know you're tight.
You want a big man to treat you like a little bitch?
Maybe.
I don't know what's going on with you.
What do you mean?
The clothes, the posturing.
I just miss my friend.
You keep this side of your life completely separate.
When you're fucking...
I'm a private person. I'm a nice guy.
If you disrespect me, fuck you up.
I get that.
Yeah?
I'm the same.
Are you now?
Yeah.
So this is Femme. No Christmas baubles, no tinsel, but share something with Eileen in a way.
Yeah.
Matthew, set it up for us.
Gone back to the beginning again now with a kind of a dangerous relationship movie. This centres on Jules, who's played by Nathan Stewart Jarrett, who does a drag act in the local nightclub in London. Seems to be very kind of enjoying his life. He's in a happy place, but then unfortunately has a run-in with some thugs in a corner shop led by George Mackay's Preston. He gets beaten up quite badly. It's quite a distressing scene, which again is something that should probably have a trigger warning. Later on, he re-encounters Preston in unexpected circumstances and begins to form a relationship with him without letting on who he is, because Preston doesn't recognise him out of his drag outfit. And so there's a real tension kind of builds as to how Jules is going to take his revenge on Preston, or perhaps whether they're getting quite close. Perhaps he's going to rethink what he's going to do. But all the time we're on this knife edge, seeing what Jules is going to do, what his next actions will be, and whether Preston will find out and what he will do when he finds out. So it's a real sort of thriller dynamic.
Yeah, and you know, Preston is a powder keg. He has proved himself within the first sort of 15 minutes to be a dangerous man. So this whole film for me was incredibly stressful, because I was thinking, really, what are you doing?
Yeah.
If he finds out, he's going to go crazy. And that really worked for me, because I was pushed out of my comfort zone watching this, terribly scared for Jules. And I just think, you know, the performance by both these guys, George Mackay as Preston is so convincing as this thug. He calls himself a thug, and he really is. I recognized him so much, and I just could feel him as a real person. Yeah, I just was on edge throughout this film. However, I'm not sure that it entirely worked for me. The intention was a bit muddied of the characters. And so I wasn't entirely sure what had happened at the end. And it was sort of quite opaque for me, which is probably what the filmmakers intended, that we as audiences go out saying, did this happen or did that happen? But for me, I found it unsatisfactory. How did you go on with it?
Yeah, similar. Yeah, I mean, I was gripped throughout it. I mean, it is kind of watch through your fingers stuff, because there's so many moments where it kind of gets to the sort of tipping point where you think one or other person is going to find out something or do something. So it's very, very edgy viewing. But yeah, I feel like perhaps the resolution was unsatisfying, or it feels like this story could go on and on. It feels like it's a story that doesn't reach a kind of natural end. There is sort of more to unpack. So yeah, that is a little bit of a letdown compared with the rest of the movie, because the rest of the movie is of such high quality. But yeah, but other than that, yeah, I thought it was superb. The kind of the chemistry, if you can call it that, between these two characters is just so riveting, watching them kind of circle each other and kind of learn and develop and evolve, and how they react with their own friendship groups around them as well. They're kind of sort of waiting for them to find out what's going on as well. So it's always very very interesting and keeping you on your toes the whole time.
It does a really good job of exploring trauma and how that changes a person, a really traumatic, abusive event, how that changes a person. And I really like the detail throughout this of Jules's friend saying, you're not the same, I just want my friend back. And the sort of kind of unhelpful things that people do say, but that really tracks how this person has lost themselves from an attack and that it has affected every aspect of his life. So I think in that respect, it's a really useful film as well. And certainly, again, trigger warnings for anybody. This does involve a hate crime and abuse, and it's tricky to watch. But I do think, you know, this is something that is very prevalent in society at the moment. You know, it is something that is happening in the world. And so to see the sort of absolute reverberation in someone's life and how that affects them is really great and really well done and actually really nuanced. And this idea as well of posturing within sort of queer society in the way that this Preston guy presents one thing and certainly to his friends presents a certain idea of himself, but is perhaps something else and also isn't really sure of what he does want sexually, emotionally, or anything, is really interesting. And Mackay does a really great job of showing chinks in that armor of that sort of bad boy, where you're thinking, is there more humanity to him than I think? And is he hurt too? And is it hurt people hurt other people? Is there that going on? So they're very intriguing characters, both of them. So for my money, this is a really fascinating film. I just didn't feel that the ending worked for me. I felt like maybe they didn't know where to end it. But that, again, the filmmakers could correct me, and that's entirely the intention, that we all go home with an ending in our head and discuss that after the film.
Yeah, it's a really fresh take on the revenge movie. I mean, we've seen so many revenge thrillers where you get someone who's abused and then just kind of like goes and tools up and gets a load of weaponry. I mean, this is much more subtly done, the way it explores revenge and the motivations for revenge, and perhaps those motivations can be compromised and changed. So yeah, it really kind of pumps new life into a fairly stale template. So from that point of view, it feels like something really original and different.
Absolutely. Okay, so I think we're saying this is one to definitely go and see in the cinema.
Okay.
Especially because the opening is this drag act that is, you know, all lights and drama and a huge cape and singing and lip syncing. And you want to see that on a big screen. It's fabulous. Okay, so this is Femme, and this is out in cinemas on Friday. Well, that was a quick and brisk, you know, like a Christmas stocking of little ones. We've wrapped it up. What is your film of the week, Matthew?
I'm going to go for Femme, I think overall. But yeah, I enjoyed all the films this week to different degrees. But yeah, Femme would be my number one.
I will go for Eileen. It's not a Christmas story, but it kind of is, because it's very wintry and very snowy. And, you know, a figure in red does appear. So I will go for Eileen. It's my Christmas film for this week. So if you like this podcast, a reminder, you can make your life easier by subscribing. Press that button now and we will appear in your ears like magic, like elves, not those kind. Before we go, time for a listener's question. What 2023 movie do you want in your Christmas stocking, Matthew?
My favourite of the year was Suzume, the anime film. I don't think it's actually out on physical media. It's on digital. So, I'm hoping for a Christmas miracle and that it will suddenly magically appear in my stocking on a lavish Blu-ray disc. That would be my Christmas wish.
I think I want Barbie. That's the one for me. I would like to watch that. And it was a small film this year, little film. Didn't really touch the box office. Oh. About a doll. Don't know if you are familiar. Barbie, I want in my Christmas stocking. I want like whatever full on all bells and whistles version they have. I want to watch it repeatedly. I want to watch extras. I want to see Ryan and Margot flubbing their lines. I want all of that shenanigans because, I think Barbie is a movie that is both important and completely trivial, and I love it. That's my criteria, important and trivial at the same time. Barbie ticks that box. Right, so on that note, we will be back next week with Olivia Colman and Timothy Chalamet to talk about Wonka and all the rest of the films that are out next week are probably going to be paling in comparison. I mean, did they have a chocolate fountain at their premiere? That's all I'm saying. But for now, Matthew, let's say goodbye. Do it goodbye. In your best Christmas cheer.
Ho, ho, ho. Goodbye.
And it's goodbye from me. I don't know what that was. It was a Christmas elf. But there we go. That was my best one.
Okay, people, tomorrow morning, 10 a.m., Santa's coming to town.
Santa! Oh, my God!
Santa, baby, just slip a sable under the tree for me. Been an awful good girl, Santa, baby, so hurry down the chimney tonight. Santa baby, a 54 convertible to light blue. I'll wait up for you, dear Santa baby, so hurry down the chimney tonight.